Welcome everyone to a new episode of the FinOps Weekly Podcast, and today we are going to have a very interesting deep dive into the, you know, collaboration, the headline levels of FinOps. Today we have Julia Becker, who is a FinOps lead at Mercedes-Benz, and it's a public speaker and an active member of the FinOps community, and she's today going to be sharing her personal experiences and, of course, not anything related to speaking on behalf of her employer. So, Julia, how are you?
I'm good, and you? Nice to meet you.
I'm doing great. Nice to have you today, and I think it's going to be a very interesting podcast for the people. So, you know, you are a FinOps lead and you have a lot of experience in the sector. So wanted to check, like, for people that are in those positions that are talking to executives and to talking to finance and engineering, how do you adapt your message and how do you deal with talking all these variants of people, and how you adapt to those conversations?
Yeah, so normally I only talk to executives or to engineering teams. I usually don't talk to finance teams. So I'm focusing on these two teams, let's say. And when I talk to executives, I normally focus on the business impact, of course. And when I talk to engineers, the focus shifts on efficiency and ownership.
Oh, that's a very interesting way. So you adapt to basically the context, and you adapt your message to where you are talking to. I think that's very important because you cannot talk about tech things to leadership and vice versa, because nobody will basically listen, right? So what do you think it, you know, motivates each of these teams to take action and to change their behavior around cloud spending, like just telling them, like, you need to save money for the company, you need to do this? Like, what does move the needle?
You just need to understand the value of FinOps, and not only the cost-cutting part, let's say. I believe, to be truly honest, that there needs to be a shift left mindset. And because in my opinion, the cost awareness starts in the design phase already, right? And what you can do about that to motivate people, and not only with the cost parts, is when you provide transparency. Because if you ask me, transparency drives action. If people see the waste visible, maybe with numbers behind it in their dashboards, when they have KPIs behind it, when they see what other people did, when they see how other people succeeded with FinOps, and you provide maybe small concrete wins on how they can act, I believe that those actions also motivate teams besides the, let's say, budget part or like the money part behind it.
Yeah. And also, like, introducing a bit of, you know, gamification, a little bit of fun to the events, plus you know, some incentives, as you mentioned, right? So doing things,
right?
Yeah, I mean, at least, you know, you need to have like a little bit of competition, a little bit of fun to drive a better attitude, and it's just like, this is mandatory, you need to do this, blah blah blah, and nobody will, you know, get buying of themselves, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and you know, moving on to like the specificity of engineers, like, how do you get them to think about cost and to engage with FinOps? What's specific for that group of people?
Yeah, like I said, engineers are driven by efficiency, and you just need to shift the focus into the engineering language and into technical levers. And you need to show that over-provisioning, for example, doesn't improve performance, it just burns money, right? So they just need to understand that, for example, when they do FinOps, it's not more work. They just, when they do something, they initially should, just like the shift left thought, think about FinOps and just do the right thing from the beginning. And when I tell that to people, when I talk to engineers, this is normally what they completely understand and have in their mind, let's say.
That's totally true, and I come from that let's say IT side, and I totally understand that the performance and the availability is one of the most demanding features that it is in our work. And if you frame that, it's where you you get buying from the engineering people. And you know, coming to the topic is that sometimes FinOps is oriented like a cost police or cloud cost police. How do you have you ever encountered that resistance, and how you have handled that?
Maybe I got lucky because I rarely encounter this direct resistance, but more often teams feel maybe uncertain because FinOps is expected. They know it's a to-do. Like, everyone has heard this term already now, like in 2026, right? But sometimes maybe people feel like the path is not clear. Where can they start? Where does it end? Like, if does it even end? And no, it does not end. But and when this skepticism appears, I always focus on shared goals, on support, on telling them what is FinOps, even going away from the term, right? But maybe giving examples, giving, like I said, transparency, quick wins. And what I do always when I talk to teams, the first thing I do, and maybe this is why I do not often encounter resistance, is I show examples from other teams. I show them, hey, this team, they needed, I don't know, 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 days to implement this and that, and they saved that amount of money, or they prevented, I don't know. So if I give examples, real world examples, what another team from, I don't know, same apartment department did, then this really motivates people because they see it's actually manageable and they can do it and it's worth it. So
yeah, I think always, you know, like case studies and showing examples that other people in their same position, like whenever you feel, you know, represented and you feel a bit more aware that someone like you or someone in a similar situation has done it, then it makes you, you know, feel like, okay, that's the benefit I could get. That's how it can improve my team. And that's a good way. So I think it's a very good approach, the one that you do on that side. And, you know, we've talked about this approach, and I'm sure it has worked well, but what are one of the biggest challenges that you have found when trying to implement FinOps, and you know, how do you overcome that? So apart from having the, you know, this resistance that some people are like, no, what is the things that when you are implementing FinOps, it becomes difficult for you, and how you have handled that?
So in my case, as a FinOps lead of many products, when I learned the term FinOps, when I took over this responsibility, for me, the hardest thing was the challenge of knowing where to start and how to do it and how to scale it, right? So, yeah, in my case, I was actually very happy that the FinOps Foundation also exists, right? And they have the framework and everything. And I just read through all the stuff that I found there. And then I was implementing my own, let's say, process, and working together with colleagues to have a clear process on how to start instead of just starting. And then we just did a like POC and validated if the process is working, if the material is working, if the, let's say, way of talking or trying to motivate people is working, or if you need to adapt it. And after that, we really had those building blocks that were needed. And this really allowed us to scale efficiently. And yet, for me, this was really like the biggest challenge to implement this process, right? Because without this construct, it doesn't really work. You need to have some way of enabling FinOps. Because in my opinion, enabling FinOps is the most important part, instead of just showing people, hey, you can optimize this and that, and here's just a guide, just do it, right? You just need to enable the teams, right?
Yeah, you need to basically, like, I always frame this, like, especially in big companies, you know, the FinOps team cannot do it everything. I relate always on the security, but you think of it like, the teams are the responsible for their own security, their own FinOps, and their own costs. And then the FinOps team is where all these initiatives are designed, all the system to for the company is designed and managed and maintained, because they are the ones, you know, being up to date. And then they you know, send that information to the teams, and then the teams are the ones responsible for implementing those, because they cannot be like one FinOps for every team to go there, go supervise, and then implement it, right? It'll be a huge team within within the company, right? So I think your approach is great, and I think that's something, especially working for like big companies, that they have like a lot of IT people, and there is a lot of departments, a lot of products, as you mentioned, a lot of things going on. I really think that that hub and spoke that is mentioned in the framework, wherever there is a central team and, you know, champions, kind of FinOps champions, and these individuals that are working on FinOps within their scope, within their team's scope, I think it's a great approach, and I think it works really great. And, you know, following up on that is like, how do you enable these teams? How do you make these teams like having a champion or a FinOps champion or someone that you can rely upon?
Yeah, so what I did, or what I also always suggest, is to create an assessment for FinOps. I mean, this is, I think, also in the FinOps framework, right? One bucket. So basically, what I did is I created a FinOps assessment, which is based on technical and cultural topics. Because, as I mentioned, it's not only technical, there also needs to be a shift left, right? As some sort of a roadmap for the application teams, right? And then preparing a guide, which helps to identify how to implement those open to-dos which you identified in the assessment. So kind of working as a counterpart together, right? And then, as you mentioned, assigning an external FinOps champion for maybe, I don't know, 1 quarter or 1 month to support the team and check in and maybe go for the assessment, just being there as a buddy, let's say, as a mentor on this topic. And then, of course, appointing some sort of a responsible person in the team, whether it be a developer or the product owner or whoever, but one person that is driving the topic in the team, that is making sure the topics are being done. And of course, as I mentioned before, FinOps is a never-ending story, right? So when you did the assessment, of course, in the future, you would need to have this mindset and always focus. Then I don't know, just like security, like I said, when you review your architecture, don't just review it for security, also review it for FinOps. And yeah, currently I'm also very focused on AI personally also. To be honest, naturally this approach could also be adapted into a FinOps AI agent, right? So an AI agent who is assisting the team throughout these 1 month, 3 months, or like all the time, whenever they need it, person that is like an AI person that is supporting the team, having the internal external know-how of your company, and just being there, right? So this is also something, I don't know if they're like smaller companies, maybe just with a few people, and they don't have a FinOps champion, maybe an AI agent could also be a fresh and a good start here to do that, right?
Yeah, no, that's definitely a good idea. And the good thing is that you can ingest a lot of information, and it would be acting like a first line of support and a first line of solving doubts. So I think it's even like a good product on its own. So I definitely recommend people to give it a try and think if they can implement it in their own company. So thanks for that suggestion. And, you know, regarding like following up on that is, you know, you mentioned that, and, you know, the new things about the AI and the change of, you know, change of scopes in FinOps and all these things. But what do you think, like, now it's a question that teams should be asking that you think people are not asking enough? Or what do you think, you know, is something that is hidden there in FinOps, but I think you think it's super important?
So normally, I would take it into that direction when I start talking to people that are maybe new at FinOps, for example. Then I always suggest them to ask themselves, what are my biggest cost drivers and why are they my biggest cost drivers? Instead of looking into the whole bill, right? Like, have a focus on, I don't know, the three biggest cost drivers first. So this is something they should be asking themselves, because I feel like a lot of people are really out there in the wild looking at FinOps and really don't know where to start. So this is something where I would suggest to start with.
No, that's a good one. I especially come from the cost drivers. When I talk to like more technical people, like people that are super into technical, they always think, I know, I've talked a lot with Alphonse about that, like he always frames it as cost drivers. So it's great that you frame that way. And, you know, wanted to also check your side. So can you tell us a bit more about you, you know, your roadmap? Can you explain a bit to the audience, like how you become like, you know, FinOps lead and what's been your journey so they can know a bit more about you?
So, yeah, I was studying business informatics with a focus on cybersecurity. So I'm actually a cybersecurity enthusiast, let's say. And I actually started as a DevSecOps engineer, but actually focused more than on the FinOps side because someone was needed to drive this topic and it was quite new. And then I really stepped into it and I was able to produce something myself, let's say, like to produce this assessment, to be a little bit creative, to support the teams. And it was really great also to learn a lot about the cloud by doing that. And on the other side, I'm doing cloud security. So those two topics, I believe, are also very great together, right? Because I believe both topics are actually telling you how to act in the cloud, how to configure the cloud. And this is why I believe having both sides is also a very great thing and really makes fun. Day by day, driving those topics, and I'm currently doing that for two hyperscalers, and gets more exciting now. And also since the AI topics are rising everywhere in the world, so I feel like it's a cool topic, and for people who want to start with FinOps, I can also always recommend to have a look at it. But I believe in the future, it should be completely taken over by AI, to be honest with you, because FinOps is really a topic. That's why I also mentioned AI agent. FinOps is really a topic, I believe. Is something that can be fully automated and should be fully automated. It's a great candidate for that topic. But nevertheless, it's great to learn it, right? It's great to learn it because now you can still do so much with it. And I don't know, if you have some AI ideas for FinOps, whatever, just go for it. I feel like it's a cool topic and not so many people are in it at the moment, right? Like other topics, so.
No, of course, it's not as crowded as it is in other sectors, and definitely, you know, AI can really help a lot. I know there is a lot of people working on tools on that, on, you know, MCPs, AI agents, all of these to be able to help that. And I can definitely say that, well, of course, automation is one thing, and then AI can really help. I think accelerate, then you have the human part, which you mostly cannot automate or delegate, and it's a huge part,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, the enabling part. So you need to be like a FinOps buddy, kind of supporting the people, motivating the people. But like all these technical topics, I don't know, writing an automation, something like that, I believe in the future. Will be automated completely by AI. Let's see how it goes. I'm really curious on how this topic evolves in terms of AI. So it's really interesting, definitely.
No, we'll dive into that. Like, we have a summit like April. We had probably when we publish this, we'll have done that already. But we had the summit on the 16th of April talking about like cloud and governance with like the AI playbook for that. So how AI is affecting, because governance is one of the things that, you know, you define a lot of policies, and now AI, before it was a pain to describe like policies, SCPs, Azure policies, all of that. And now with AI, you can do that like quickly. You can define like awful large policies that do everything that you tell in natural language, so you can now translate like directives from the company to natural language and then move it to the policy language, which I think it's something awesome. Like, I also do it for, you know, Terraform, which is like always, it's always been a pain for me to write because there's a lot of code. And now, yeah, you can tell them, and it's like, it goes there and it creates what you think. So now it's more about the idea and the, you know, the strategy rather than the implementation on its own. It's a lot of help, right? It's what you said. You have a lot of help on that.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel like it will be shifting a lot in the next years. It already is. But it's great, right? Because then people can focus on what they really want to do, right? And like you said, the human part will be there in the governance and the enablement.
It will be fun to watch. So, Julia, thanks a lot for taking the time today. I hope people had a great time and took very good notes about your insights, because I think there is a lot of them. And, you know, thanks for being here today.
Thank you very much. It was great. And, yeah, looking forward to your podcast.
Yeah. So thanks a lot, and see you in the next episode.
Bye.
Bye-bye.